Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and cafeteria food fights. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my fellow murdered heroes. I don't even know where I'm going this week. John Maltz is here. Hi, John.
I did not really get the food fight aspect, actually.
Okay.
So that's all right. That's a good catch.
Okay, thanks. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Here's the thing.
Wow, way to drag in some off show.
Yeah, we were giving Guy a hard time for saying it. Here's the thing all the time.
I was, yeah. I caught myself saying that so many times. I pick up phrases just to buy time to collect my thoughts, and it turns out I just kept going back to the well of here's the thing, which is actually Alec Baldwin's podcast, but not, Anyway.
To which I say, Guy, to be fair. Hold on, I'm thinking.
Right, yeah, I do that too. Yeah.
When you think about it.
I just love that Mulse has made me so self-conscious that I'm going to basically be mute this whole app. So.
All right, so let's talk about a couple shows. We're going to kick it off this week with a discussion of the latest episode of Stargirl, and then a little bit later we'll discuss this week's episode of What If. I'm on Stargirl recap duty. So I'm going to start with that. And we're talking about season 2, episode 6, which is, some, once again, summer school, chapter 6. Well, there's some stuff this week. Yolanda is still working in the diner, and she's having a little trouble with her job. And all of a sudden, Isaac, the creepy kid, is there and doesn't say anything for a bit. And then he like throws her illicit pictures in her face. And says he knows what she and her friends did. Meanwhile, Beth has brought her dad lunch, and she's still trying to fix her parents' marriage. It's not going great. When she leaves, she's confronted by Artemis, who throws a tennis ball at her, baseball at her, and knocks her phone out of her hand, and says something very similar to what Yolanda saw. Meanwhile, Pat and Court are looking at the art room in the detritus from last week and examining the pictures when Cameron arrives, and he mentions that Cindy is back. Pat finds a picture of Cindy with the black diamond. Mike is still hanging around with Zeke, who is building a chainsaw for Stripe. Until Cindy shows up and we learn that Mike's not going to be recruited. He's the bait. Pat returns to the pit stop to find Isaac and Artemis there, and they basically beat the crap out of him and then destroy the robot. Beth, Rick, and Yolanda compare notes about all their interactions. Pat is in the hospital with a concussion, and Cindy finally calls Court on Mike's phone and demands that they have a showdown in the cafeteria. Barb calls the Shade and tells him that Cindy has the black diamond. The team rolls into the cafeteria. Fight, fight, fight. We'll talk about that later. Beth locates Mike and Cindy, seeing the fight is not going away, starts to summon Eclipso. But the Shade appears, threatens her, and Eclipso takes it up a notch, possessing Cindy. Court cracks the diamond with the staff, and around town, everyone leaves their homes to see an eclipse in the sky. Eclipso has appeared. Cindy tries to go after him because he used her, but he rips out her knife, ouch, and throws it into Isaac, then chows down on his soul and disintegrates him. Artemis books it. Meanwhile, tentacles come out of a fragment of the diamond, and Cindy is sucked in while Court tries to save her. The Eclipso stabs the Shade, who tries to deal with him, and the Shade vanishes into shadow. The staff seems to hurt him a little bit, but he also seems to suck the power out of it, and then he flees. There's a nice little pullback moment on the faculty parking for the art teacher there when he leaves the school. The Shade reappears somewhere briefly, looking not too great, and then disappears in shadow once again. The team sort of has their post-fight rehash. Mike wants his own Stripe this time because he felt useless during the fight. Rick's got a broken rib, and they all decide they're going to need to take down Eclipso. Meanwhile, Eclipso morphs into the creepy child that we saw way back in episode 1, luring Dr. Midnight's daughter to her doom. And he
laughs maniacally. Evil Billy Batson.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the caption was diabolical laughter. Yes. I think
it was maniacal. Yes, it was
something. Yeah, I can't remember what it was.
It was creepy. It was super creepy. Yeah.
It was real creepy. Yeah, I like the way he moves from shadow to light. Like it's an effective little transformation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job.
So after weeks of the slow roll, stuff really hits the fan this week.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
There is that centerpiece fight is pretty great, I thought. I thought it was really well done.
I think in general it is really good, yeah. I have a couple of quibbles about it, but I mean, sure. mostly the fact that our man is, you know, he's powered up and, you know, has some ability, you know, some sort of magical capability or whatever it is. Whereas Artemis is just like a regular person, right?
Well, we don't know that. She seems to be juiced in some way. And I think there's a difference
if she's
between...
not, then I understand. But like, it just seemed like I thought she was just like her parents. She's just super capable and which is fine for what she can do. But right. I don't think she should be able to take blows to the head against like toilets and stuff.
That's right.
They're breaking porcelain.
They're really scaling. They're doing the superhero thing, right? Where you're only as powerful as you need to be at any given time to make the story work. Because when she tackles Courtney, when she's possessed, I guess last episode? I forget. If she was that strong, that's bad. Like, there's dead people. You can't hit somebody with enough strength to break a porcelain thing. And, like, you know, especially when she's mind controlled. So it's weird. It is weird that she can go toe-to-toe with... our man.
Yeah, I would have thought a better way to stage that fight, assuming that she's not juiced up in some way, would be just have her be quicker and more nimble and get away
from him, which I think she usually is.
Pummel him from a distance.
Like,
rather than,
she seems like, much more skilled, right? Like, he's got brute force, but I think he doesn't entirely know how to use it.
And they do play that a little bit, but I just don't think that she should be taking those hits.
Fair. Totally
that
fair.
That seemed a little unrealistic.
That's James Bond stuff. Like, didn't he do that? Like, he... Yeah, I think in Casino Royale,
Casino Royale,
and that was like one of the most brutal things I've ever seen. I'm like, oh my god, that is like insane.
The two little details I wanted to call out that I really liked was Artemis has ISA spray painted on her backpack, which I enjoyed, and the scene where she shoves Rick into the toilet and then Rick punches the bottom of the toilet to let all the water out, I thought was very clever.
I did like that too.
But overall, I think that fight is a lot of fun. It's fun to watch the team work together at various places, right? Like, there's a bit where like Rick like throws Yolanda almost at Cindy, and that's pretty cool. You know, the staff stuff is pretty great. I thought it was a lot of fun. And somebody, a review I read somewhere said, like, props to this show for making somebody with like a superpowered violin actually scary.
Yes,
that was kind of terrifying.
Yeah. So
that poor actor, I mean, like, he's not given a huge amount to do, and then he's dead. I mean, seemingly, unless they find a way to
disintegrated. Well, there's still that whole Dr. Midnight thing lurking out there, although I think he was killed by the Shade, though, right? Like,
I mean, he told the Shade, your powers come from my world, so it's possible that Cindy was sucked into his world, or maybe even both of them, but... So I think there's a chance we might see Cindy again later anyway, but I think more likely
to see Cindy than Isaac. I think so too.
He looked like he was really like eaten.
Yep. Got disintegrated. Not great.
Yeah. Wasn't he the guy last week that was being real creepy?
Yes.
I did not like that. I didn't bring it up on our show because it was, I don't know, felt negative, but he was like mentioning the photos again from like last year.
That was the beginning of this episode.
I've forgotten a lot about last. I watched like the last half of last and then went into this one. I do not like that. I don't like, it's creepy and it's kind of doesn't have creepy. A lot of place in this show, you know. I know.
You mean it's too creepy for.
Yeah, it's a little on the edge, you know, and it's kind of shaming a teenage, like, I don't know. It's a difficult subject, and I'd rather a show like this didn't really try to play with that third rail quite as much.
I thought they did a nice job on that plot line in the first season. So
they did, but I mean, you know, play with fire, you're going to get burnt eventually, right? Like,
I suppose.
Take it. I mean, they haven't so far, but it does not make me feel comfortable or good at all, and it's difficult to be like, okay, he's the bad guy because he's shaming her for it, for sure. But at the same time, there's like a lot around that, right? Like her own guilt. Mm-hmm. And like it's not necessarily an incredibly healthy way to look at it. And there's a bunch of kids in this show.
You're using it to make him, you know, to sort of hang a lantern on him being a bad guy, but I think
I thought that they did a nice job of, like, Yolanda points out at the end, like, he didn't deserve to die, right? Like, the show does.
I know, I think, but now she's forgiving him despite him being like.
Well, but there's I think that, like, forgiving him is a long way of saying, like, I don't wish him to be dead, right? Like,
well, yeah, I know.
I think a line. I think there's enough nuance there that you can get away with that idea of, like, our heroes don't want to wish
anybody
dead. I mean, Courtney tries to save Cindy, right? Like, that's the whole crux of it. And I thought that scene was really well played, where she's trying to drag her out of the pit or whatever. Like, our heroes try to save people, right? They don't condemn people to death. And that's what the whole thing Yolanda's been struggling with over a brainwave. Yeah.
Right. I suppose the difference for me is that being shamed in high school for having shared some intimate photos is more likely than having your dad die because he's a frost giant breathing cold air on people. You know what I mean? It's like one of them is like a tangible, real thing that probably happens to a lot of people. And the other one is like, well, you've got weird conflict issues because your parents are superheroes. Like, that's a, it's a tangibly different kind of thing.
It is a show that navigates that, right? I mean, we also have Beth dealing with her parents' divorce too, right? Like, we deal with real world stuff along with Fantastical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do want to make it clear. And I know John and I didn't like the Genie episode, but they've done a pretty reasonably good job of dealing with the divorce stuff, like, even dealing with this. I suppose I just would like to encourage them to be very ginger about things that are actually, you know, kind of destructive in real life, I suppose.
Yeah.
Which is, whatever. I don't want to get into it. Yeah, taking the photos is not, but the whole shaming of all of that, that's a bad thing, and it's difficult to deal with.
So there's
I was gonna say that, but I wanted to call out the mic misdirection. I thought that worked really well.
Yeah,
because it fooled me. I mean, I assumed that they were trying to recruit him, and I think they handled that switch around nicely.
Well, it made sense too, right? Because I don't think anybody ever believed that Mike would join the team in any way, even disenchanted as he was.
But I think they played that. They played the disenchantment up and made him seem like he was upset with everybody. I mean, he was upset with everybody. And you could see how that would happen. And I was dreading that happening because I think, I don't like that plot line, I guess.
We've seen too many of these shows.
One of the good guys deciding, I'm going to go bad because I'm mad at my parents.
Right. I just never saw that being I could see the temptation, but I also could never see that character actually doing that. Just based on what we've seen of that character. Hard to believe. Right.
I wouldn't have thought so. I thought maybe they were going to do that anyway, but I'm glad that they didn't. And I'm glad they handled it the way they did.
He also seems a little too young to be a sullen teen. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's still got childlike.
Well, apparently aged him up. Yeah,
right. The actor's 40. Yeah. Wow.
I don't know. I mean, usually all the actors are way older than.
I think I read somewhere that they aged up the character. Like, they're
getting him smoking. I think is what they're doing.
I think they mentioned that they made him older in the show to reflect his actual age. He seems to be, he's 16, the actor.
The actor's 16, okay.
Yeah, so I think they may have bumped him up a year or something to, make him closer to his actual age.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like the character at least seems like a sort of a bit of a grumpy child who feels left out because of, like, new family situation.
Yeah.
More than he feels like a sullen teenager, like some of the other characters we see, like Our Man, that kind of thing, right? Like,
yes,
yeah, like, he's, I don't see him going to the bad guy side so much as, like, just feeling disaffected and like the little brother who's just left out of all the fun that everybody else is having, you know?
Right.
Because there's a distinction between I feel bad and screw you, you know?
The other thing I thought of that I thought might happen is they would somehow use Eclipso to sort of mind control him.
Right. Sure.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they did we Guy mentioned the struggling with, like, people are as powerful as they need to be in a given scene, right? And so, especially because when you set up a bad guy, you want them to feel like they're actually a threat. So, you know, we don't entirely understand the full range of what Eclipso can do. You know, we saw the stuff that he has done in previous weeks. We see him being pretty, at least evil here, and pretty powerful. But yeah, we certainly don't know what the full extent of that is.
I liked Eclipso's look.
Yeah, it looked
good. Creepy.
Which was, it's really creepy. Like, you know, weird elf.
He looked like
slight leprechaun.
I mean, like, I think if I saw him, like a picture of him in his makeup in daylight, I would be really unimpressed.
I saw,
they did the
poster shot they had of him when they announced that he was a character, and I'm like, I don't know, but I feel like it's you're right. In the lighting, it's way better than it would be.
It's really good
in the full on.
It's really I mean, it's the. Because we got to get one in. It's like putting Worf on the bridge of the Enterprise with like floodlights flooding him. Like, you're going to see a little, like, the makeup is going to be a thing, right? But what is it? Star Trek VI? You know, like those Klingons, same kind of makeup style. Like, they look awesome. Yeah. Just because the way it's lit, kind of thing. I really liked the makeup. It did look a little bit like the bad guy from Thor, The Dark World.
The Dark Elves.
I thought about that too. I know you did. Come on, John. It's your favorite movie.
Guess it's the best movie.
It's the best movie ever. Yeah.
Just for the record, I do not think that.
I know, but I love that you write for that movie. I really like that about you. Sorry, that was weirdly heartfelt. I honestly don't care how you feel about that movie. it looked really great, and they're using what they've got well, you know, like the shadows on light, the movement. Mm-hmm. Like I said, transforming into Billy Batson Jr. was cool. Yeah. Do we know who that kid is? Like, did I miss something in the background that, like, this is somebody's kid?
I feel like it's largely an illusion of some kind, I don't think they have any specific identity. I do want to call out, as a reminder, the actor playing Eclipso is Nick Terabay. Who we know, well, I know from The Expanse, on which he played Ava Sarala's bodyguard/spy in the early seasons. And of course, we know from Arrow as Captain Boomerang. Great role in that show, but he, I feel like I like that actor. I thought that role was always pretty terrible in Arrow, and then I saw him in the...
I didn't even know he was the same guy from... I missed that he was this... How did I not know that was the same guy from... those two shows
when you see him in The Expanse, he's really good, and when you see him in Arrow, he's not great, but I think that the role is letting him down a little bit there.
It takes a certain actor and this is not correlated necessarily to their talent, but like chewing scenery, like playing different roles takes a different thing out of you, right? So if you're given poor dialogue and you just can't understand what the heck's going on when you're guesting on Arrow and everybody else is doing their thing and you're like, I don't know what's happening, I have no idea, and the director is like, I don't know, I just, this is my work for the week, you know, like, you, it's difficult to kind of get into that thing. So I would believe that, you know, he's probably great on The Expanse, which is a great show that I actually haven't watched enough of, and he's cool here. Like, he's effective, he's menacing.
I'd never seen his comic book form before. I mean, I'd never read him, you know, anything with him in it. But they did a good job of representing that without putting him in a white leotard.
Great look for anyone, really.
I don't know. If you like a muffin top, I'll wear a light. I will wear light.
The leotard? How does that work? Is it around your neck?
I don't need this preview of
squeezing up through the.
I don't need this preview of Moon Knight, guys. Thanks.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Me in a body sock is something nobody pays any money for.
Yeah, I pay money. I pay money actively to not see that constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I keep texting you photos of me in a body sock.
I cannot. iMessage needs better blocking features. Yeah.
You cash at me $5.
We just assume you're watching shows with your girlfriend. You've missed once again.
I swear to God, I was so lucky I didn't text you anything. Not that I'm like sending anything naughty. Oh my God. We just because we started off with like, yeah, you know, naked photos of each other. Like, I don't like the way this show is going. And I think maybe can we just scrub it and just start over?
Well, let's see how the files come through.
Can we talk about Shade?
Yeah.
You know, the actor is obviously having it up. I like the character. I think it was last week Courtney made the distinction between a bad guy and an evil person.
Which is right out of what he said to her.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I like that she lifted that from him. But I think that's true. There is definitely a distinction between bad people who, let's say that, you know, that means self-interested, and evil, which means, like, malicious, like, actually wanting to do harm to other people. Mm-hmm. One of them is, like, just wants things for themselves and doesn't care that much, and the other one is like, actually they care about hurting people, if that makes sense, or just are completely and utterly callous. He doesn't seem to be completely and utterly callous. Like, what do you think he wants with that gem? I don't necessarily think he's going to use it to get all powerful and rule the world.
I don't think so either.
I think he
needs to get it because he's the only one who can handle it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not entirely convinced he would just up and destroy it, although I don't think that's necessarily out of the question. Like, I think he has self-interest in some way, but I don't know what it is, right? He really perks up when Barb mentions, you know, that she has the gem, or that Cindy has the gem. He really is like, okay.
Yeah.
It's hard to read him.
The way he's presented in the line, it's intentionally hard to read him kind of thing. But I have a certain degree of trust in him, in that, like, he never pretends to be a good guy. He's never like, I'm here to help you, I'm going to do the right things. He's just like, you guys are way out of your depth. Give me this thing and I will take care of it.
Right.
Yeah. And I sort of believe that, if only because he's scared of it. Like, he's like, I don't want, this is bad for everybody, and I don't want that, and it's going to mess everything up. So let's just get rid of that and go on with life. It's like when the bad guys, I don't know, Dr. Doom and all the superheroes team up to beat Galactus or something. Yeah, whatever it happens.
It's a very enemy of an enemy of my enemy situation, right? Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I thought that was cool. I like him a lot. I like his, I know we joked about the look being over the top, but I enjoy the over the top look with the sunglasses and the hat and everything. Yeah. I think it's ridiculous.
It's growing on me.
Yeah. I thought that was good.
I mean, I agree with James about the British stuff. Was like, you know, I love tea. I mean, okay, we get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to bring up a stripe this week, which I always get sad in shows when things get broken, because I'm like, oh man, he put so much time into that. Like, he was really working on it.
Do you know what the producer said?
A montage scene can't fix, though.
Yeah. I honestly think the producer said, hey, do you know how much money we put into the VFX for this? I'm kind of happy to see that thing broken.
I thought it was an effective scene, though. I mean, first of all, that scene has one of my favorite bits in this entire season so far, where Isaac's going to basically do something pretty bad to Pat, and Artemis is like, no, he's my dad's friend. I thought that was an amazing aside.
Which is so ridiculous, because he treats him like such absolute crap. But he probably is, because he's a complete jerk and he probably doesn't have many friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And I like that she knows that, like, no, my dad actually cares about this guy. Like, you know, not in a great way.
I'm going to beat him up. You can imagine them at home and he's like talking about his friend Pat.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, my friend Pat, the guy I beat up yesterday. Anyway.
Well, I think we were saying last week, it's Sportsmaster. Like, it's 110% on the field. I'm going to beat the crap out of him. I'm going to do whatever I can to, like, just destroy this guy. And after the game, it's like, man,
Orange Slice
wasn't that fun?
Around.
That was a
great
game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Destroyed you.
Yeah, you and me, back in the ring. Yeah.
I enjoyed that a lot, and I enjoyed Pat's continued insistence that he's not going to hit a kid as he gets his ass handed to him. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty great.
I love that. Because, A, I believed it. He was really not going to hit a kid. Yeah. And the issue is, like, you're not going to get a chance to hit the kid.
Yeah, exactly.
The kid's
right.
Gonna, yeah.
Right.
It's nice of you to say that. That's cute that you would think that's going to be a thing.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, but I didn't get the sense that he was saving face.
I didn't think so either.
He just got way outclassed.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
I'm not going to hit you. I can't, but I'm not going to.
even if I could. But I thought that the destruction of Stripe is effective in making it feel like, again,
stakes.
There are stakes. And even the kids who are still, you know, not full supervillains have the ability to do enough damage to actually, like, make a mark, right?
It's also kind of another switcheroo too, right? Because they come for Mike and they capture him, and then they go for Pat, and you sort of think, oh, they're gonna take Pat out too. But I mean, they kind of do, but it's incidental to taking out Stripe,
right? And the threat of the whole nobody really has any secret identities, right? Like everybody. Yeah. I mean, they do. It would be really hard to keep that secret.
No, but they all know
right. But like and that's threatening, right? Because it means like, oh, we don't have like a safe place to be because they know where we live and they know where our, you know, hideout, as it were, is. So I think that's effective in ratcheting up the tension as well, right? Like the fact that when they start off this episode with everybody, like all the bad guys being like, "We know who you are," like it already feels kind of menacing.
Yeah.
Anyway, anything else you guys want to say? Or should we do a rating?
Yeah, let's rate it, because we got a big one coming up.
John?
It's a biff. Yeah, I enjoyed, like I said, I enjoyed the Mike misdirection. I had little quibbles about the fight scene, but I mean, it was still fun, and I'm looking forward to see how they can beat this thing.
Guy?
Yeah, it's a biff. I liked the fight scene in that it was super duper crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was violent. It was well shot. It was well done. I don't think it necessarily made sense given that, but who cares? Well,
yeah,
John cares. That's who.
Exactly. Point taken.
and I care too. Like I liked when, I don't know, he picked her up and like they were smashing through the bathroom stalls and she got her legs on the wall and like through the guy. Like there's a lot of really kinetic, really brutal stuff and it's well done. Yeah. Like that is a really, really crunchy, badass fight scene.
Yeah,
like I don't know if Arrow got that complex at times, you know.
No,
it felt much more dynamic in the way that they shot it.
It felt dynamic. And do you know what, like shooting one of these is tough. Every time you shoot that, you've got to reset the whole scene. So
exactly, you destroy all those bathroom stalls. You can only do it once unless you're gonna lot of time.
Yeah, then you reset, you do it again. Like it's a lot of work, and they did an amazing job. I mean, there's a reason that like a show in its sixth season doesn't do that, because just doesn't have the time. They got to keep moving.
Also, we didn't give enough credit to the fact that they have a throwdown in the cafeteria, which I think is great.
You're
where
so
are we
set
gonna
on
fight the cafeteria?
You're so set on this food fight thing.
I mean, it's funny because it's not like let's meet out in a parking lot. It's like let's meet at school.
Yeah,
it is funny. Yeah, and so yeah, it's a biff. And I know I've done this before, but I apologize for making you sad on the episode that you were not, Dan. That one was...
I don't apologize for anything.
John apologizes for nothing.
Wow.
It's fine.
I don't apologize for anything. The John Moltz story.
About related to this.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow.
Moltz, famous for writing...
frequently.
Yeah. Famous for riding his hog around with like a giant, like flaming eagle on the back of his leather jacket.
That sounds right.
No rat rats.
Yeah. Yeah. Biff. Dan?
Biff for me, unsurprisingly. I thought it was great to have a big showdown after we spent a lot of weeks sort of building things slowly. Yeah. I thought they did a really nice job with that. I think that as we discussed the fight scene, super well choreographed. Everything felt to me like I enjoyed working in all the powers and making things feel very crunchy, as Guy said. There's a lot of menace here, especially now that Eclipso is sort of out of the bag, Gem. You know, we don't really know. I mean, he doesn't really have much of a motivation other than just straight up evil, it seems like, right? Like, he's not like, I want to amass power or I want to amass wealth.
To be free, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. But now he's going to be free to just, like,
To
torment people, essentially? Yeah. Like, that's all that's his thing.
That's what Pat said, yeah.
Right, exactly. And so I think that's, it's scary because it is definitely a thing where it's like, you know, we don't really know, he's otherworldly, we don't really know what his deal is, and that feels unknown and kind of terrifying, right? It's something a step above kind of what they dealt with last season, so I think that's effectively raising the stakes, which is nice. So yeah, I give that one, I give it a biff. Very excited to see where they go from here. I think we may step away, I would not be surprised, step away from the whole Eclipso thing for a little while.
I honestly thought this was the end of summer school. I was like, yeah, okay, so did I. It seems like
a good place to sort of wrap it, but I don't know exactly how they're structuring the rest of the season.
Yeah, keep him in your back pocket to like introduce new thing. Probably Solomon Grundy seems to be a thing.
Right, we got a lot of little plots sort of circulating.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about Solomon.
You know, and then come back at the end of the season and have Solomon Grundy beat the crap out of him.
A super team, like, yeah, you know.
Well, you've also got Dr. Midnight alive there somewhere. You've got whoever the start man, Joel McHale, is still out there. Exactly. Like, there's a lot of little things.
Some other balls in the air. Yeah.
Yep. So, lots to do.
I would love to see Joel McHale with a paintball gun take on Sportsmaster.
Got to make it a fair fight, I guess.
Just the cast of Community shows up and paintballs the crap out of Sportsmaster. That would be perfect.
All right. That is it for Stargirl. We'll be back next week to talk about next episode. But we'll shift gears right now and discuss What If, which John Maltz is going to recap.
Okay, Killmonger rescues Tony Stark from, you know, getting blown up in Afghanistan, and Tony is so grateful that he hasn't joined Stark Industries to the dismay of Pepper and Happy. Killmonger reveals Obadiah's schemes, which cements his position even more, and then he convinces Tony to build robots using vibranium. Tony sends Rhodey to buy the vibranium from Ulysses Claw, but T'Challa shows up to break it up. Killmonger uses one of Tony's weapons to kill T'Challa, and then uses T'Challa's claws to kill Rhodey. Tony finally catches on to Killmonger using Jarvis and has a vibranium robot fight him, but Killmonger beats it and then kills Tony. He tells General Ross that Wakanda killed Tony, so Ross starts a war and forces Stark Industries to make more robots. Killmonger then kills Claw and delivers him to Wakanda, where he meets T'Chaka and tells them all that the United States is sending robots to attack. But if they let the robots in, they can close the barrier behind them and cut off their connection to Jarvis and stop them that way. They do that, but then Killmonger reactivates the robots and fights with the Wakandans to defeat them. T'Chaka is so impressed that he makes Killmonger the Black Panther. He sees T'Challa in the afterlife after he drinks the serum, and T'Challa tells him that he will pay for everything eventually. Ross is still going to war with Wakanda, but Shuri visits Pepper, and they join forces against Killmonger. And we have another ending before we get a pleasant resolution.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one. I don't know.
So Eclipso is pretty cool, I gotta say.
Okay, here's my big complaint about this episode. His plan is even more complex than in Black Panther,
right?
And yet no one basically catches on to him until the end, and then we don't get the payoff. We don't get to see him taken down,
right?
Which is like the third time that we've had a hanging ending like that. It's probably all going someplace, because I think there's going to be a tie-in. But it's still kind of, annoying at this point.
Yeah, if you've seen the mid-season trailer, whatever it was that they put out, it really does appear that these things are going to tie in. That said, got to kind of, at this point, we need to evaluate them individually, because they're not actually connected at any point right now.
Yeah.
How did this one make me feel? Not great.
It's like, I don't know, why did he shut off the robots and then reactivate them?
Exactly.
I don't even know what the point of that was.
Right. Besides all the stuff that actually made me kind of just emotionally sad, like, okay, you killed Black Panther, and that's a bummer. That's not...
Right.
That's in the script, that makes sense, that's fair. It's just, you know, meta-wise.
It is affecting, though. I feel like Tony was overly stupid in this.
Tony was an idiot. Yeah.
But, that makes sense for who Tony probably would have been if he had not... I don't know. It's difficult to say.
He
wasn't stupid. I mean, he was, he didn't have his eyes opened to the effects of his weapons, but he was still incredibly smart.
I'm not discussing him. Well, here's the thing. I mean, smart in terms of his ability to create things, I think so, but I think he's maybe not the best judge of character, especially because he doesn't really have his arc of sort of sobering up and starting and reaching out to people and making connections.
The other thing I noticed, though, is there's a scene where they are working on the robots and Tony is drinking, and originally Tony was never shown drinking as he was working, other than doing sales pitches, but he was never shown drinking doing the work that he loved, which is in his
Yeah, that was his. I mean, he's certainly an escapist, and his escapism.
Yeah.
Is like absolutely. Does he building have a problem? Stuff
for sure. He's got several problems,
but it's also hard to predict how the effects of that event, you know, that inciting event might ripple outwards. Right. That's the whole point of the premise is like,
yeah,
I don't think that came across that way.
It didn't. But, yeah, he did feel like an
idiot. I don't think it came across believably anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't really understand what, like, how complicated is this plan? At some point, we're like, we're told, like, Christina Everhart tells us that, like, his, I think it was her, his unit, maybe it was Pepper, his unit was, like, stationed 400 kilometers away from where he just shows up and takes out all of the, I don't get it. What's going on? I don't understand.
I mean, why sure his hair is not Navy regulation.
Wait, he is also
I'm willing to give like a seal, like a crazy seal with a Killmonger name on it. Like, let's just presume that he's
seals usually get special dispensation for that kind of thing. But I will say the fact that he makes him COO and later on he's still wearing his uniform, that's doesn't make any sense. Also, I wanted, this is a slight art quibble.
Also, he's a lieutenant, which is
not
to be laughed at.
Common, most Navy SEALs are like petty officers, senior petty officer. Right. They're enlisted rather than commissioned officers,
right?
Yeah. Or at least, I mean, who are not in command of units, etc.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I say the thing that this is a little art nitpick that I thought. I think in general, a lot of the character models have been pretty good. I thought Rhodey's model was terrible. It looked nothing like Don Cheadle.
it's like they're like, okay, well. We don't have Don Cheadle, and we don't have, oh my god, was it Terrence Howard?
Yeah, so we mash them together.
Yeah, maybe they
So we're like, okay, third generic Rhodey. Like,
but it's so frustrating because it's Don Cheadle's voice coming out of non-Don Cheadle,
much like
Mark Ruffalo.
It didn't look like Ruffalo.
And some of the ones like
with those characters have been played by two people. They are doing something like that.
I guess we're sort of It was not my favorite model. I thought Killmonger's model was great. I thought he looked really good. Yeah. I thought a lot of them looked really you know, they've done a nice job with it overall. But every once in a while, I didn't think Pepper's was great either. But you also had somebody, you know, doing a Gwyneth Paltrow impression, as it were,
which was, fine. Workable.
It was fine.
Serviceable. Yeah. Pretty good. Yeah. Don't watch their lips in this show. It'll hurt you because the movement is so rotoscoped and the lips are not. And it's like, it's hurting my head. Yeah.
I mean, I think this disappointed me because I was, for a Killmonger episode, actually wanted it to be more friendly to Killmonger, I think, because from the movie, he was a great character, very complex and had a really good point. That actually eventually becomes, you know, part of T'Challa's ethos, right?
Right. He's a psychopath.
He picks up some of his, you know, he gets his message and he's like, okay, we're not going to do it the way that you would have done it, but we're going to do something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And I would have rather seen more of the, you know, like maybe he gets to do what he wants to do. And he's not as violent as he would have been in the movie, but he's still very violent. I don't know. Right. I think I would have preferred to implement his vision rather than do a way more complicated version of getting
a philosophical problem. Sorry, Dan.
Right.
Yeah.
I just think what the movie did well, right, was sort of set them up across ideological lines, kind of analogous to like a Martin Luther King, Malcolm X sort of dispute. Yes. Whereas here, he comes across like a psychopath who is just out to like kill everybody. And that is
there's so many shades of gray there. Looking away from other characters and sort of smirking.
Right. He's just like a mastermind. He's 10 steps ahead of everybody.
I completely thought of that. I completely thought of Prometheus.
Adrian Chase in this.
Yeah. Not to mention when he secures the vibranium supply that he needs for his robot army, he kills two black men. kills Rhodey and he kills T'Challa.
Right, and he has a brief philosophical moment with Rhodey where he's like,
he gives. I mean, for a guy who's like strutting around in the navy whites for half of the show, he gives Rhodey a really hard time about wearing a uniform.
Right, it's complicated. I listened to a show. I'm going to plug another podcast. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry because it's great. I listened to a show called The Spectrum Lounge, which is Rebecca Theodore Vachon puts on. I think she's at filmfatale_NYC on Twitter. She's a film critic. She's great. She's a black woman. And she recaps these kind of shows with this guy, Robert Young. He served in the Air Force for 20 years and they had a lot of really good shows about Bucky and Sam. What was it? Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And their most recent episode about this this one in particular was insightful. I think it's worth listening to only because, like, you know, we're three white dudes. We're not necessarily going to have any sort of input on this. And I think they do have some sort of insight. And especially Robert was talking about his service and like sort of how he felt. You know, he has a certain degree of conflict about that, you know. And Killmonger kind of gets let down here in from what we saw from the movies and doesn't really move the point forward anymore. And I don't really understand the purpose of this. Like, okay, he connived his way to be the Black Panther. Why? Like, what? To what end, you know? And we see Ross is about to attack Wakanda, so I guess you think, okay, a war has been precipitated. Okay. I mean, also, the war's precipitated because they killed Rhodey. I don't think that happens unless you're really looking to go to war. Like, wars are not... You killed one dude. It's... whatever. That's getting way too deep.
Ross is a, you know...
Russ is
a little bit trigger happy and
sure
and
he is exactly, but like ultimately
careful in his thought process about as to how to tone down a situation for sure. He is an escalator.
Oh yeah.
So I kind of believe that. There's also a good scene
and an elevator
where Ross comes into the control room and says, "Status, gentlemen," and then this woman responds like, "Hey idiot, there are women in the room." So I thought it was pretty good. There were a couple of few like things that, in there that I thought were pretty good, actually. I mean, there's a jab at the Patriot Act where they take control. You use the Patriot Act to take control of Stark Industries. And then there's also a great line that Killmonger delivers to Tony where he says, "The difference between you and me is you can't see between you and me."
That line made the episode. That was
is the best moment in the episode. And
that's like, what that character is. More, that's what it is.
More of that.
Yes.
Yeah. And I will say, I agree with you guys. I mean, I think you mentioned just a couple little call outs there. And I actually missed the first one. And I think this is part of emblematic of the episode for me, which was it did not hold my attention as much. Like I found my attention wandering, whereas usually in these shows, like when I can tell when I'm dialed in and I'm like paying a lot of attention, and when I'm sort of like, this is fine. And I agree.
I think that's a problem for me with this show now. That's getting to be a little bit like, okay, these because they're doing bottle episode. Well, you know, currently to date, they are bottle episodes. I don't feel like there are any stakes.
But they're not.
It's just going to be a wacky. It's going to be a wacky thing that happens that didn't happen in the regular universe. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
Right. And moreover, they're not just bottle episodes. I think as some of our fellow people in the Incomparable Slack commented, like, they don't resolve anything. There's no ending to these stories. And because there's no ending to these stories, it's not even a bottle episode because it's like, it's the first part of something.
Yeah. And you don't even get the catharsis at the end.
Exactly.
Get,
it's like, not
Star Trek.
It's clever, but not a well-built story in that way, because if we don't have a concluding ending, we just feel like we've been left hanging. Yeah. And it seems like
the Captain Carter one was probably the closest, I would say.
Right.
I guess so, but you're still left with...
Even there. There's a lot of things feeling like if there were like three episodes after each of these, like dealing with this whole story,
She's definitely coming back. So
I do think that maybe they're going to close it out kind of strong. But
still, at this point, we have what we have.
I mean, how many times are we going to see Tony die? I mean, he's a dick. He's kind of a dick. Like, I'm a huge Iron Man fan. I have been since the
80s. What if we kill Tony Stark in every episode?
Right, yeah. Like, I really am. Like, since the 80s, I've, you know, the Silver Centurion suit. Like, I like Tony Stark, mostly because I'm never going to be Batman, because I don't know if you've seen me recently in my leotard, but it's I've got a long way to go. But I've got, like, a better shot at, like, building a suit of armor. Like, it appeals to me because of that's sort of my bent in life is like the more technical kind of side of stuff. And yet he didn't, this was not a Tony that I recognized. Didn't make a lot of sense. I don't know. What was the point here? What was the moral of this story? I think I would have preferred if you're going to do a Killmonger episode is, give him the power, give him the crown right away, somehow.
Yeah. Yep.
And then watch him struggle under the weight and the burden of governance and have him come around to being like more lenient and more accept. Like, somehow. I don't know. I think that would have been maybe that's what I wanted to see. I don't know. Like, what this was is like, I don't know, some kind of revenge fantasy that sets him up as king of Wakanda. To what end? You know,
yeah, I like Killmonger as a character, and honestly, I would have been more interested to see something where he was a hero or was forced to challenge his own beliefs.
What,
right?
Yeah, I think that's what I wanted. Yeah. I mean, even like a very complicated hero.
Well, even a villain like Doctor Doom, who is like, I am going to save, like, all I care about is Wakanda, and I am going to do whatever the hell it takes to make sure that Wakanda is okay. That would have been good.
Yeah,
but it felt like he's like, I've got an axe to grind. I'm going to use these robots weirdly. And then I'm going to take over Wakanda, and then I'm going to use Wakanda to use as my weapon, which is like, okay, you're on a singular mission.
There's so many steps to this plan, and it, you know, looks like it was created by committee.
Honestly, that Phantom Menace shut down all the robots thing. It was like, oh God, are you kidding me? Why did you build these robots? What is the point of that? I'm going to build an army of robots to attack Wakanda.
I mean, I guess I can see, like, I need to fight along the Wakandans
so that they give me
trust.
Yeah, exactly.
So they'll see that I'm a. But there's so many places where this can go wrong. It magically does not go wrong. But
I also did really like the moment with T'Challa in the afterlife.
Yeah,
I thought that was a really cool moment. Yeah. But also, it's sad because it's like T'Challa's like, yeah, I know you're bad news, man, but I can't. I can't stop you from becoming the Black Panther, and I can't tell anybody about it. So,
I
have no agency over this other than to like sort of mildly admonish,
which is tragic in its own way, right? But like, it is definitely. It was still a great scene.
Oh yeah, yeah, man. I don't like watching T'Challa die. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I know. I don't know why. I just love that movie so much.
There's lots of reasons.
Yeah, it's not even a perfect movie. Like the final thing is whatever. The final fight that they have, I don't care about. The final scene when he's dying on that mountaintop, which we see, wonderful. I mean, well, wonderful. I appreciated it. I thought it was a great piece of filmmaking. The inverse that we see this time is also pretty cool. I like that. And at the same time, that movie delivered. It asked you to think. It asked you to be considered. Mm-hmm. It asked you to examine, you know, African diaspora, like the relationship between African Americans and other Black people around the world, like how that interacts, like what would an Afrofuturist sort of society be, and what would it, like, there's a lot of really, really fascinating questions there, like, you know, just calling Everett, what's his name,
a colonizer.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny. That is inherently funny.
And in a great joke line.
It's a great joke line, and it asks every white person.
Don't speak up at me, colonizer.
I know, and it makes it
so good.
It's so disarming that every white person in the audience is like, okay.
He's so hurt over it. Like,
I know. He's like, ooh, like, that's not me. That's my. But it's like, yeah. Like,
yeah, that's what every white person says.
But you know, you're carrying it. I know, exactly, which I really, really liked. Like, that is a very thoughtful, very very well written, very like remarkably great movie. And I don't think this had the same level of consideration and care put into it, which it shouldn't, maybe.
No, but it's not surprising that it didn't, but it can still be disappointing. I do also want to call out, I do think that scene, that fight scene with Claw and everyone with Black Panther is awesome. Like watching Black Panther in animation, the fight aspect of that I thought was really really great looking. Like it had a lot of visceral kick to it. It had a lot of fun dynamic, like him zipping around and being really fast and everything. I really enjoyed that.
Do you know what's really bugged me?
You get the sense that he and Rhodey were going to work it out at the end.
Right, like, exactly.
Oh, yeah, they definitely would have. Like, he drops down there.
Off. I mean,
he already knows. He's like, they've never met in this continuity, at least. And he's like, okay, Colonel Rhodes, like, he's done his homework. He's T'Challa. He's got it nailed.
And yet he doesn't know about Killmonger. I mean, like,
right, yeah. It's imperfect.
Nobody knows about Killmonger.
What I've never, ever understood about Black Panther, even in the movie, is like, okay, you move like a cat, you're really sneaky like Batman, and then you can just take multiple bullet shots from like a Gatling gun in a helicopter and catch. It's like, why are you sneaking? Just walk up to these people.
It's more terrifying that way.
It is definitely terrifying. Like, it is great, but it's like, at the end of the day, why bother?
I mean, in the first scene in Black Panther, the reason he's sneaking around there is because they have hostages. And
that's fair. Okay,
At any point, somebody else can get hurt.
Speaking of that first scene, what was sadly missing here was Nakia, who had Killmonger's point and was not listened to. And that sucks. There was a lot of, at least in that movie, a lot of really, really great female characters who were, pretty represented, and they kind of followed it up on this, but I think they had to remove Nakia's perspective just to make it fit in this narrative, right? Mm-hmm. Like she was saying exactly all the things that Killmonger was saying, and if you'd had her there, in this episode, and something that Rebecca and Robert mentioned on their show, which I listened to mostly because I wasn't excited about this episode, so I wanted to go get a different opinion and see, like, did I miss something that I should have got, really? And I rarely, rarely do that, but this one I sort of wanted to invest that in. All of the people that are noticing how screwed up everything is are women. You know, it's like Pepper, Shuri, who we haven't spoken about, and everybody else is just kind of getting swept along with the moment.
Happy.
Not happy. Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But still. But most of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But still. But yeah, I kind of... I feel like none of the characters were really done a lot of great service. Like, they all had to kind of be dummies.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. No. Any other comments? We want to do a rating here.
I guess let's just do a rating.
Let's do a rating, John.
It's a John Jr. for me. I mean, I like I said, I think these are probably all going someplace, and I have a fair amount of faith that it's someplace good. But currently, I'm a little bit tired of the format. These sort of unsatisfying endings, and this one in particular, I think, missed a lot of opportunity. So
Guy,
I decided yesterday this was going to be a John Jr., and I hoped for two things. I went and listened to the podcast I keep mentioning to see if I'm like, am I crazy? Am I totally missing
something? Did they also give it a John Jr.?
They said it was difficult to watch, you know, for various whatever. They don't actually read it. They just talk about it. But
you should introduce them to the rating system.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, I'll text her right now and let her know about the rating system.
Maybe
sure,
they can buy our rating system and then we'll get. Ooh,
yeah, we can license it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna license out our rating system. That's how great that thing is. She actually she wrote for Ebert at some point, so like in his column. Yeah, so I think she's got a handle on a far better rating system that is probably better known than the old Biff John Jr. Alex rating system, which is a huge classic. Two thumbs up. What's that? Biff. That's what it means. I wanted to like it. I thought maybe I was missing something. I thought, I don't know, was I in a bad mood? Like, the Tony seems dumb, and maybe I like Tony so much that, you know, but ultimately, it's a John Jr. I feel they can do better. I have to listen to that. I also really, really hoped that our discussion of it would turn me around. Like, it's happened before. Like, I've walked in being like, I don't know if I like that episode. And then talking to you guys about it made me feel better and happier. And like, yeah, I'm like, yeah, that is fun. You know, like, that is good. Whatever. I was in a grumpy mood or I wasn't appreciating it. And like, you know, you guys appreciating it rubs off on me and I enjoy it. No. This one fell flat to me. No, you didn't. And it could be an artifact of like this character and this story is maybe it's more meaningful than like, I don't know, the Hulk beating somebody up. Maybe I wanted more from it because the villain was so great in the movies. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but this one fell flat for me, and I think I would have preferred if they'd done a better job because they had a lot to work with there. And I kind of feel that they dropped the ball on this one. So yeah, John Jr.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with you guys on this one. I oftentimes want to look and see the best of things, and I feel like maybe I am definitely inflating my grades sometimes. But on this one, when you guys said John Jr., I felt nothing. And that's, because I'm going to give it to John Jr. as well, which is, I was not engaged. I was not like interested in seeing where this was going for a lot of the reasons we've discussed. You know, I didn't think it was particularly, it was complex, but it wasn't nuanced, right? Like the plot is complicated, not complex. There you go.
Right.
And it was just like, I don't know. I'm not really getting anything out of this that I feel like in the end, Killmonger does the exact same thing that he's doing in Black Panther, right? He's doing the exact same plan. It's like nothing has really changed other than, you know, he's taken Tony out of the equation.
Other than our heroes are dumber.
Yeah. Or just non-existent or not present, right? Which is also disappointing. And so I feel like I just didn't know what to get out of it. And then it ends on that sort of, there is like a glimmer of hope, but also not really a story or resolution. So I don't know. I was not blown away by it. I wanted to like it a lot more than I did. But I just, didn't grab me.
I would like to, one thing I forgot to mention was that I think the voice actor for Tony is really good in this one. I'm assuming it's the same guy from the previous.
Yeah, I think
where
so.
He didn't have as much to do there. And I think he was given more of a chance to shine here. And I think he did a great job.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's very, when he sees Killmonger written on his uniform, what is that, German?
Yeah, it's funny.
I thought that was funny.
Yeah, he's done a lot of voice. I think he was the guy that from the game recently, and like from like a lot of animated stuff. He's been doing Tony Stark for a while.
Yeah, I mean he's definitely doing an RDJ impression, right? Like
a little bit.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Yeah. I mean it's hard because he's also. He and Steve are the biggest characters in the universe in this universe, and they replace the actors, right? And also our universe. and it's like, that's a tough role to fill, right? Like if somebody replaces Betty Ross, it's like, I don't know, right? Like I know who was in that. I knew it was Liv Tyler in that movie, you know, 20 years ago, but
it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because that character has only been in one movie.
Never going to be her again.
Right. Exactly. So I feel like it's like, yeah, it's fine. But yeah, he did pretty well. I thought the actress who did Pepper did pretty well. I don't like the guy who does Ross. I don't know why. I think William Hurt has a very distinctive voice and he doesn't quite nail it, and it bothers me.
But I mean, it's William Hurt.
Yeah, he's William Hurt.
Yeah, that's hard to pull off, you know. It's like there's just decades of confidence and that goes into that kind of delivery. Like when he's standing in front of the Avengers and talking about playing golf and he had a heart attack.
Yeah.
I believe you. I believe that happened to that guy. I don't know why, but I do.
He's William Hurt and he's great.
He's William Hurt, yeah.
All right. That's it. There are three episodes left. We are expecting some sort of potentially tie-in or crossover. Something like crossover. Yeah. It's unclear. Right. We don't really know what the deal is with this show, but there are three episodes left, and I can stick it out for three more. I think it'll be fine.
I mean, I still enjoy it. I mean, I'm still, you know, mostly enjoying it. Let's put it that way.
Right, but we will add before we go. There is a trailer out there for Hawkeye.
Yes,
and that looks awesome. I'm very much looking forward to that. Borrows a bunch of the Fraction, Matt Fraction, David Aya run, looks good. Yeah,
you should watch the trailer, and then when you watch the trailer and you think, boy, there's some stuff in there that I'd like to have a shirt of, just go to cottonbureau.com and search on BiffCast, and you will find not one but two shirts.
Glad you have two, man. That's like
you got two.
Jeez, I only saw one of them.
bro, there's two shirts.
There's the talk to a bro. What is it? Talk to a bro. Now I can even remember.
Trust
it.
A bro. Trust a bro. I see it now. I'm looking now. It's trust a bro, John.
Okay. Trust a bro.
We have very strict editorial control here. We don't
I'm
even.
I'm so tired from all the shirt making. Rogers the Musical.
I think I just want.
Oh,
one
right. Of. Okay.
I have a new rule for myself. I can't, I won't buy it. I mostly make these because I want them myself. And I will not buy one unless I've sold enough that will justify the purchase.
Oh, you know
so
what? That's
please go and buy a shirt.
That is a wonderful call to action. John never
John
looks
needs
good.
Clothes.
John needs clothes.
Yeah.
Yes.
John needs a shirt that's made to measure his specific body.
Nerdery. Yeah.
He has trouble putting together a look that makes him feel confident. I've heard him say so.
Tell a story about a time when you didn't feel confident.
Well, the last time I saw John, he was wearing nothing but Saran wrap over his nipples, and it was
wearing
not
a white leotard.
It was, yeah. Oh, that would have been a better callback. I wish I'd done that.
All right, that's it for this week. I would, of course, as always, like to thank my co-host for being here, John Moltz. Always a pleasure.
I'll buy some illegal vibranium with you guys anytime.
Guy English, thanks for being here.
To check you later.
I regret everything.
I don't even know what that means. It's the
everything.
Dumbest thing I could think of saying.
Yep, it worked. Nailed it. thanks everybody out there for reading the transcripts and following along. We'll be back next week.